So, welcome everybody to this retreat, and the first day of it. First day, try and keep it reasonably light. So, there's no interviews this morning, and this afternoon we have 4 p.m. we have the sutta class. That's correct, isn't it? Where's Eileen gone? Oh, there, okay, yeah. And that'll be at 4. Okay, excellent, good. So for the main purpose of coming here is to develop our meditation practice. And meditation practice is not just sitting down there and learning how to float up into the air. Although many prisoners up the road would love to hear that teaching of how to levitate or walk through walls. And all of those great psychic powers, they may sound interesting, they may appear to be amazing and wonderful, but the most important thing is to be able to have a peace of mind and calmness and be able to let things go. That is the greatest of psychic powers, to have peace and stillness. So in order to do that, we're developing this meditation. And the meditation is not always just sitting on the cushion or walking meditation. It's what happens beforehand is also important. In other words, before you sit on a cushion and start to meditate, if you think, oh, well, I can't quieten my mind, I can't still my mind, my mind is all over the place. Then you can ask why. It is because you've been running around for the last hour beforehand, doing stuff. And because of that, it does take a time to calm the mind down. Here in Australia, in the outback, you find these lorries with not just one trailer on the back, about three or four trailers on the back. They're even called road trains. And they're full of produce and deliveries up to some of the remote parts of Australia. Now you can imagine, if you're driving one of those road trains, it has such a huge mass behind it. If the driver has to put on his brakes, it takes almost a kilometre or 500 metres before he can actually, or she can actually stop. Because the momentum is so strong, it takes a while for all that energy to dissipate and for the driver to come to a complete stop. But if you're driving a bicycle, if you want to put on the brakes, you can put on the brakes and you can drive and you can stop within a few meters because the momentum is not that strong. So, the simile is, when you are meditating, are you a bicycle or are you a road train? And how many trailers have you got behind you? If you're a bicycle, you can come in here, you can sit down, you can be calm and peaceful very quickly. But if, you know, you have lots and lots of busyness, lots and lots of things to do, have just come from overseas and struggling to get through all the customs and the... Do you have problems getting through the customs in the airports? They let you in okay? I suppose they have to have let you in because those who didn't let in, they wouldn't be here to answer the questions, would they? But nevertheless, many of the people in the Perth airport, they even come here or they go to Nolimara Centre. And so whenever I come through Perth Airport from overseas, I always see somebody there who usually asks me, oh, John Brum, you're back, are you giving a talk this Friday night? And they asked me straight away, I said, yeah. And he said, I need to check it. Oh, no. Off you go. They let me through pretty quickly. Even in Singapore. Is anyone here working the customs immigration in Singapore? Oh, good. I can tell the story then. It was a young man who was travelling from UK, doing a little after his university graduation, just touring around a little bit. And he went to Vietnam, he enjoyed himself immensely in Vietnam, and then from Vietnam he was coming to Perth. And he flew via Singapore Airport, via Changi Airport. And as he was going through the airport, they found out when they did the X-ray of his backpack, there was a bullet casing inside of it. Not a live bullet, but the casing. And that showed up on the X-ray, and so he was taken out of the line into the special room and said, "What's this in your backpack?" He said, "Look, honestly, I don't know where it came from. I was just backpacking. It could have fallen in from somewhere. But it's not live," he said, "but it's still illegal in Singapore." And he said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I'm going to Perth. I'm going to visit a monastery." And he said, this Gustin's man said, "Ah, so which monastery is it?" And he said, "Oh, it's this monastery in Serpentine." "Oh, really?" He said, "Are you going to see Ajahn Brahm?" And he said, "Actually, Ajahn Brahm is my uncle. It was my nephew coming to visit me." And he said, "Oh, if he's your uncle, then no worries, go through." I got him out of problems for that one. Anyway, actually, amongst friends, he doesn't call me uncle. You know what he calls me? Munkle. I'm Munkle Brahm. But anyway, so it can be tiring getting your room, getting everything organized. And so it takes a while to slow down and to relax. And of course, one of the things which will help you to relax is actually trying to, it's okay to having your phones or laptops or something to record, but please don't do any messaging while you are here. To try and keep it nice and quiet and peaceful. When you think, "Oh, what's the stock market going to be when I come out?" Oh, don't worry about that. It goes up, it goes down. It's anicca, impermanence. It goes up and goes down. What about the situation in Singapore? Is there a situation in Singapore? Hong Kong. Yeah, no, Hong Kong. Yeah, it goes up and goes down. But the point is, can you really do anything by worrying about it? Is that really helping anybody by thinking about it? You haven't come here to think about these things. I think that's one thing the Dalai Lama once said. He said, if you can change the situation, then worry about it. There's nothing you can do. You can't improve the situation. Then why worry? It's quite logical, quite reasonable. And I think you come all this way to come to a worry-free retreat center. So you don't have to worry about anything. You've got nice food, nice accommodation, a nice teacher. I'm not like one of these Zen monks. Have any of you been to a Zen retreat where they use that stick? You have? No. You did? Did you get hit? Oh. Oh. Or not the one I went to. They whack people. That was really scary. And of course, I never got whacked. The reason was, even though I was sleepy, it was the young man sitting next to me. He was more sleepy than I was. So he got whacked first. And after I heard him getting whacked, I was perfectly straight. I wasn't sleepy for the rest of the retreat. It really sounded scary. But anyway, you don't do that over here. Instead of using Zen sticks, what do I use? Teddy bears. For a bit of kindness. To learn how to relax, first of all. So once you learn how to relax, slow down, become peaceful, then the body starts to feel healthy, rested, and ready to meditate. Your vehicle has slowed down. And as it slows down, one thing you realize is you can see much more and experience much more. I don't know how many people are here for the first time on this. Wow, a lot of you. Wow, that's excellent. I can tell the old jokes again. But now this is one of those stories which I think you can appreciate it, and even those who have been here before know it's a beautiful story of coming up here. This is the 36th year we've been up here on this hill as monks. And after 6 or 7 years, always working very hard, and one day I went out somewhere in the morning for some appointment which I cannot remember, and then coming back early enough and not in any rush, and I told the driver, please let me off. I said, never say to a monk to drop them off, because that hurts when you drop people off. You usually let them disembark. So they let me off, or let me disembark, at the bottom of the hill, so I could walk up. It was one of those beautiful sunny spring mornings. Just the clouds were wafting slowly, like meditating clouds, upon the blue sky. It was warm. It was a slight breeze. It was perfect conditions to walk. And I had all the time I needed. And as I started walking up the hill from the bottom, or maybe you came late last night, maybe you've not seen the hillside, it's a southwest highway which is on the flat, and it's about, 2.6 kilometers up the hill. So I started walking at a leisurely pace, enjoying the morning coolness. And as I walked and looked around, a strange thing happened. A funny thing happened to me on the way to the monastery. That's what they used to say in the theatres. But a funny thing happened to me, because when I looked around, I could not recognize my surroundings. It was like I was in a different hillside. Nothing compared to what I'd remembered seeing when I was sitting looking through the window of a car. And that was weird. 7 years I'd lived up here, and now it was like seeing a totally different hillside. So I was so, and what I actually saw was actually more beautiful, more attractive. I thought it may be because it was a sunny day, but no, it wasn't just the sunshine. Everything looked more beautiful. And so I decided to stop and investigate. And when I stopped, stood perfectly still, and just stared, the hillside changed again. It looked more beautiful than I'd ever seen it. I managed to perceive so many different features I never realized existed, like a little stream down the bottom of the valley, and the little tributaries, the little creeks which ran into that stream, and the rocks and the lichen on the rocks, and the birds and the trees and the little bushes and the flowers. I'd never seen them before. And they look so beautiful in the morning sunshine. Even more strange was the grass, which was in abundance. That grass looked green, and I never remembered it before. It was like a fresh green, like it had been washed or something, and polished. So it was more green than green. And then I wondered, what was happening? Because I'm a monk, I do not take psychotropic drugs or whatever. What's it called? I don't take LSD or mushrooms or anything. Although I did remember once in Thailand, I'm going off on tangents, but these anecdotes are really good fun. Well, in Thailand, after I only one meal a day, they'd actually made some mushrooms in the soup, and one of the villagers came running in. He said, "Are you monks okay?" He said, "What happens?" "But the person, the villager who put the, did the mushroom soup, she put by mistake a couple of magic mushrooms in your soup. Are you okay?" And we looked at each other and said, "Yeah, well, we didn't have anything." "Oh, very good. Somebody else must have had them." And all the monks afterwards said, "Oh, what a shame, we came so good." No, we're not into that stuff. And anyway, so it wasn't any sort of drugs. This was making us become so aware. And of course, just simple science. When you're looking through the window of a speeding car, the light which goes through the pupil of your eye, which hits the retina on the back, it creates a chemical image, a chemical reaction, sorry, and it starts to form an image of what you're seeing. However, before that image is fully formed, another image hits the retina, and then another, and then another. So none of those images are fully formed. They're incomplete, both in their detail and also in the intensity of their colours or their smells or whatever else you're sensing at the time. It's washed out. But if you go slower, then the light has more time to complete a full image on the retina, and your mind, your brain has more time to process that image. So what you see is in more detail, and the colours are richer. But then, of course, nothing can match when you are perfectly still, just watching with your eyes open. And then you can see the full picture. Everything has a chance to form. The greens of the lichen on the rocks, and the bark of the trees, and all the different leaves fluttering in the breeze. Everything is complete. And it looks so beautiful because all the colours are rich, as they really should be. But because we're moving so fast, we don't have a time to truly experience them, before another thing comes up and dislodges what was there before. So, that was why when I was just still, just watching, you never see hillsides so beautiful before. So many different colours, rich colours, and so many details. And that was a simile of going slowly. It's not you look out for these things, but these things are there. We're going too fast to really see them, appreciate them. Which is one of the reasons why, by the end of this retreat, sometimes people are looking for weird experiences, like magic lights, or just seeing the truth of all things. But these are real experiences which, you know, sometimes it reminds us that if we want to experience and enjoy this moment, go slow. Slow down. Even if you can come to a stop, what you see, and what you feel, what you hear, becomes way, way, way more than you can ever expect. It's one of the reasons why. Do you know the last part of the human body which shuts down when a person dies? I got this from one of the doctors over in Singapore the last time I was there. It was Dr. I forget what his name. He was the student of Ren Chen's father. He's one of the hand doctors. Very nice. You know him anyway.
Dr. Andrew.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, but not the sort of the main expert, but one of his helpers.
Oh,
Okay, but anyway, he told me the last, I always thought it was the brain was the last thing which shut down. He said, no, it's actually the pupil of your eyes, last thing which stops. You know why? Because only the pupils dilate. Okay, you got it. They dilate. And I always thought that Singapore hand doctors didn't have a sense of humour. The way he told it to me, it just really caught me off guard. Oh, very funny man. But anyway, so that's when you decide to, you can see things you've never seen before. You can feel them. And that's one of the wonderful, free gifts, byproducts of meditation. It's called not just mindfulness, but powerful mindfulness. And then superpower mindfulness. It's not just being aware, but we're really fully aware. It's like we're waking up. So what we see and what we hear, amazing. Just, it was not this year, but last year. I forget actually what I had this year, but last year, just after I was doing like a 15-day personal retreat in my cave, and if anyone wants to go over and see the cave, you're most welcome to. Although it is a bear cave, there's a bear inside of it. But anyway, staying there for 15 days, just being nice and peaceful. But afterwards, even for myself, it's just wonderful. You get really strong awareness, really superpower mindfulness. And then when you come out, I remember the first finishing off in the evening and the following morning having the breakfast. And I still remember, it's just always etched into my brain, into my memory, that the first thing which I put into my mouth at breakfast after my retreat was a baked bean, just one, just a single one. And I put the baked bean into my mouth. And it was a taste explosion. And the sensation of like tomato sauce, just the right sweetness and sourness, just the right degree of tang in it. You roll the baked bean around in your mouth to really appreciate. The flavour of it was just out of this world. And then you bit in to the bean. And it crumbled. It wasn't hard. It wasn't soft. It just, you might call it squashed almost perfectly. As if you were going to make a baked bean up in heaven. And that would be the baked bean that you would make. And I thought, wow. Where did these baked beans come from? Was it from some celebrity chef? Was Jamie Oliver coming to visit the monastery? Was this a 5-star Michelin baked bean chef? And I asked the kitchen, said, no, just from a tin of hot baked beans from a can. And it was the way they opened it up. And the moral of that story was, so it doesn't matter what you're eating. If you've got really superpower mindfulness, wow, everything is incredibly delicious. That is amazing. So this is one of the things to, I would say expect, because it happens anyway, to look out for during this retreat. As you slow down, you see more. You appreciate more. And you enjoy more. And you start to have a happy time meditating. And of course, these meditation retreats which I have here, they're always, usually, that's an oxymoron, they're always sort of well subscribed. So much so as the last next retreat I'm doing is in next month, November. And that retreat 3 months, you have to, in advance, it usually books out in about, what's it, 5 minutes or 4 minutes or something? 5 minutes this time, okay. So they're very popular. Why are they popular? One of the reasons is because people relax so much afterwards. One of these retreats, some years ago, a exec from Sydney, she told me she had to grovel and beg from her boss to get a week off. But you know, she was successful. And when she came here, she was as tense as anything when she started. Of course, you all know about the girl who went to the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist asked, "What's your problem, madam?" She said, "Well, you know, sometimes, you know, I have these fantasies that I'm a marquis." "Really?" "And other times I have this fantasy, this dream, that I'm a wigwam, like a teepee, like the North American Indians used to live in." And the psychiatrist thought for a while and said, "Ah yes, I know your problem. You're too tense." You is good, especially on the first day of a retreat, because sometimes you're not really open enough to hear the deep Dhamma of enlightenment or dependent origination backwards. But it gets you sort of relaxed. I can't sort of resist that other similar story. I know that Venerable Channel knows this one. That was a gentleman here on one of these retreats. He was Italian background. And so when he came on the retreat, and he came and told me, he had these visions, like nimittas. I forget if it was in a dream or it was meditating. He said, the first day, he had this really clear vision that he was a strand of spaghetti. That's weird. The next day, he visualized he was a piece of macaroni. And I said, "Ah yes, I know what's going on. You're getting memories of your past lives." Okay. So anyway, when we start to go slowly, we see more. And what we see, we enjoy more. We can actually have more penetration, see what's going on in things. So as you slow down, take it easy. Don't sort of force the issue. You find that soon the mind becomes bright and energized and happy, and you can see things. When you are bright and energized, don't go around sort of talking to people and just wasting that energy, because sometimes you want to make sure that... Oh, actually, I never mentioned about keeping those mobile phones quiet, so I could use them for this, but try not to make calls. This place over here, we've managed to get Bodhinyana Jhana Grove. Very, very bad reception. On purpose. So there's a mobile phone tower. We're in a valley. It's very hard to get good reception here. There are places where you can get good phone reception, and I'm sure you'll find that out within a few hours if you haven't found out already. But I was saying this other little story, that in a place like Australia, people who ride motorbikes and join motorbike gangs, and we call them bikies. And people who like their food and go to really good restaurants, we even call them foodies. So what do we call people who spend too much time on their phones? phonies. So try and keep off your mobile phone. The world's not going to end without you. So that means that we can really slow down, allow ourselves to slow down. And when you're not distracted by all the stuff on your on screens, you can connect much more with what's outside in that world. Look at the, even this morning, just coming out from the room to meditate at 5, just the sky was gorgeous. First part of dawn. And you can see just the clouds. It's not overcast, there's many clouds, but enough spaces in those clouds. You can see like the golden dawn. And it's a beautiful time in the morning. It's like no one else is around, so you can have it all for yourself. Just grab the beauty of the skies in the early morning. But not just in the early morning, at sunset. Now we are facing the ocean, we're facing west. It's really good feng shui in this monastery and this retreat center. So it's a beautiful outlook, and you can see the sunset in the evening. And know that while you are here, you've got nothing to worry about. You've got a nice place to stay, good food, a nice place you can rest at any time. You don't need to come to this talk or that session of meditation. It's totally your time. And you're not going to be criticized or told off no matter what you do. Everyone is accorded equal respect here. Which means that you can have this worry-free time just being here. Slowing down. And as you slow down, you find you become more aware, more sensitive. You're engaging with the world. Disconnect from your phones to connect with life, the world. It's not as bad a place as you think. And as we enjoy the beauty outside, enjoy every baked bean, that's delicious. Or every dumpling, every noodle. Then you find it's not just physical indulgence. It is like the mind is becoming sensitive and waking up. And when you sit on these cushions or chairs or stools, and of course you know that you can sit anywhere in this hall here, any place you can sit. You can even sit on my chair, but you have to give the talk in the morning. But you can sit anywhere so that you can relax, look after the body, be peaceful. And then you find when you close your eyes, you find because the body is relaxed, the mind can relax. Because the body has become very sensitive by not doing so much, you find the mind is also very sensitive. You can actually look and see what is causing it problems. It might be things of the past you're worried about. It might be problems of the future you don't know how you're going to face. That's why we have all these stories about what happens when difficulties occur in your life. There was once a man who was just walking in the forest, minding his own business, just going for a nice afternoon walk for exercise. But this was not a forest in Australia. This was a forest in Sumatra. And so, he saw that something was stalking him. He turned around, and there was this huge Sumatran tiger. Were you afraid of tigers? Have you ever seen a tiger? I've seen the tiger once in my life. And honestly, it was about as far as Carol is from me here, just by this distance, that's all. And it was amazing, you know, honestly, no lie, I wasn't scared. Wasn't scared at all. It's a huge tiger. Isn't that amazing? How can you see a tiger at such a close distance and not be terrified? You know why?
He was in a zoo.
He was in a zoo, yes. He was in a zoo. Would have been barred by the bus. I've never done that one before. Anyway. But this tiger, saw this guy, the guy saw the tiger, the guy started running, and the tiger started running after the guy. And tigers are really fast, especially when they're hungry. So this tiger was catching up, getting closer and closer to this man, and the man just didn't know what to do, but he did see there was like a hole, there's an old well in the middle of the jungle. So this guy jumped into the well to escape the tiger without really checking, because that was a dry well. There's no water in it. Because of climate change, drought or whatever, there's no water at the bottom of that well. Instead, in the bottom of that well was a big black snake. And before he hit the bottom of that well, he realized, there's death at the top, there's death at the bottom, but he just instinctively grabbed for something on the side of the well, and there was a tree root. And he grabbed the tree root, and it stopped his fall. And there he was, halfway down the dry well. And the tiger hadn't given up on him. The tiger was leaning over into the well, trying to paw him. But his hand was just too low. The tiger couldn't reach him yet. And then he looked down, and of course, all of that noise had disturbed the snake. And the snake had lifted up its head, opened its hood, trying to bite this fellow, disturb its sleep. Would you like to be woken up in the middle of your sleep? The snake wasn't happy. But the guy's feet were just too high, the snake couldn't reach. So there the fellow was, between a deadly hungry tiger and a very angry, venomous snake. And as he was thinking what to do, he noticed there was a little hole, a tiny hole in the side of the well. And out from that hole came two little mice, a white mouse and a black mouse. And the white mouse and the black mouse started to chew on the root. If nothing else could go wrong, making it thinner and thinner and thinner. It was only a matter of time before the root would not be able to sustain his weight. But he also noticed, because life is always complicated, that as the tiger was trying to paw him, his backside was moving. That's why people can't keep their backside still, not even tigers. It's one of the reasons why when you come on the other side of the road there to Bodhinyana Monastery for lunch, people sit on the wooden floor. They wonder, how come that wooden floor is so highly polished? You go to all these old Buddhist temples in Japan and Korea and Thailand. Why are they so polished? All those beautifully fat bottom monks and lay people. That's how they polish the floor. Anyway, so the backside of the tiger was rubbing against the tree, making the tree shake. And a branch of that tree overhung the well. And just in the middle of that well, just above the middle of the well, was a bee's nest. And because it was shaking, honey started to drip down. And so, with the tiger above him, the snake below him, and the black and white mice, signifying night and day, eating at his precarious hold on existence. He put out his tongue to taste the honey. Mmm, oh, that is delicious. And that's the end of the story. Does your life have tidy endings where everyone is happy ever after? Real life is like that. Sometimes a tiger above you, a snake underneath you, and they are just black and white mice, night and day, eating your precarious hold on your existence. But it's still the honey in life, always dripping down to be enjoyed. Mmm, that's enjoyable. Oh, it's a bit early. I was going to say, well, that's the end of the talk today. But I can't, it's too early. But anyway, but that's our attitude towards life in this present moment. Let go of the past, let go of the future, because you don't know what might happen next. Which is one of the reasons why I put my own slant and ending to that little tale. I imagine, because I've always got a positive mind, I imagined that what could happen next? Drinking the honey or eating the honey, and a snake below trying to get him, getting closer and closer every time as he stretched, and the tiger pawing him. Happens often. Sometimes we just overreach. So the tiger reached a little bit too far into the well, lost his balance, fell into the well. Fortunately, just missed the guy who was hanging on to the tree root, getting thinner and thinner, and went right on top of the snake, broke his own neck, and crushed the snake to death. Thereby, with the snake dead and the tiger dead, he could at his leisure just climb out of the well and just go on his way. That could happen. And sometimes these things do happen. Unexpected things happen in life. It's what you're not looking for is usually what happens. Which is one of the reasons why, when we meditate, don't go according to plan. You find if you go according to plan, you'll find you'll miss the path. Your job is to be aware, relax, be peaceful, and then find your way to become so still. Your mind can see so clearly, has so much joy, that you find out how to go to the next stage, that where it just all happens quite automatically by itself when you're not disturbing the path. I'm supposed to be a hard-nosed Theravada, but the third Zen patriarch seemed to have it together when he said the path is easy for those who have no preferences. And Visuddhimagga said, the path is, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. You try and make it work, and you find the path is so narrow. When you don't do the travelling, then you find the path is so wide. Many of you have just travelled from long distances, or have you? When I travel to Singapore, I don't go anywhere. I just sit on the aircraft, and the aircraft does the travelling. That's what they pay the money for. I do the sitting, and the eating sometimes. So a different perspective. sometimes on long distances, you close your eyes, you meditate or go to sleep, and then when you open your eyes, you're in London. Isn't that nice? I didn't travel. Didn't go anywhere, I just sat. So, this is different perspectives on how to get peaceful and still. When you're not doing anything, the mind becomes still and peaceful. One of the reasons why it sometimes surprised me, every now and again, like this is one example. I was in a Mahindarama temple in Penang. I usually go once every year, at the end of the year. And they asked me, Chalpo, who's really such a dedicated, hard-working man, and he said, can you please, there's a friend of a friend who's had some type of psychosis, but no one can work out exactly what happened to her. And, you know, she's been to all sorts of psychologists, psychiatrists, no one can figure out what's happened, and she's in a bit of a mess. So can you please help Ajahn Brahm? Sort of like a last resort. So, went there, talked to her, and I just listened to her. And it was one of those amazing times when you could be totally sort of helpful. And I said, and she explained, I said, well, I don't know how you managed to do that, but you just experienced what we call the jhana. You know, you must have just fluked a jhana, just managed by luck, press the letting go button, go into this deep state. Because that's one of the strengths of my teaching, I know those states and teach them. That when she told me, I told her a few extra things. And when you tell a few extra things, what she hasn't told me, and I said, well, this, yes, that's what it's like, yes, oh, thank you so much. She hadn't been crazy at all, she hadn't had a psychosis. She just, you know, the body had vanished for her, she'd been blissing out, but when she came out afterwards, there was no one there to tell her what had happened and why it happened and what to do with it and put it into context. So she was very happy afterwards. What that meant was there was a person, I don't know, even if she was a Buddhist, who managed to fluke one of these. Don't think she'd ever do it again. But at least she had that experience of what it's like. So if a person like that could experience a jhana, it can't be that hard. Is it? Sometimes, if we make it hard, sometimes we think, oh, this is way too much for me. And I must say that I do, when people ask me, is there any dangers in getting into these deep meditations? And I say, not really, except for one. And the danger of getting into a deep meditation is you tend to lose your hair. But not everybody who's lost their hair gets into deep meditation. And not everybody who gets into deep meditation has to ordain. But it's just, you know, you feel like you don't really belong in that world. But anyway, not everybody. So anyway, it's possible. And that's one of the things which is my job, to let you know it's possible. You can do it. Not every one of you will, but you can. There's nothing, no obstacle which is insurmountable. Number two, you don't have to meditate for long, 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 long periods of time. It's just like when you want to win the lottery. Yeah, sure. The more tickets you buy, the more chances of you winning the lottery. The longer you sit, the more times you meditate, the more chances of you. But it's always that time, that lucky pick, where somebody just gets it. That could be you. So, slow down. Relax. to the max. Be still. Don't look for what's in front of you. Don't carry the coffins of the past from the back. Just be here. See what happens. That is today's talk. Sadhu. 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 Very good. And again, for those of you who feel a bit tense, take a teddy bear and just put it in your lap. It's a surprise, it's not being stupid, that's why I put one in here. It actually does work. It makes you feel safe, which is important when you start to get into deep meditation, which is quite challenging. It makes you feel safe, and it allows you to get out some loving kindness, some metta. And it's just cuddly. Very good. Okay, so have a lovely morning. And please, lunch is at 11 for you. And it's also, if you need to rest, catch up on your sleep, you're most welcome to. On this retreat, any time of the day or night, you can rest, you can meditate. When you say free and easy, it's not just free and lazy. It's free and you feel the ease of it. I just want to meditate. I want to go for a walk. I want to have a cup of tea. It's all there for you. And that really helps in your meditation practice. So if you're happy meditating. And the next time next time see me around, but next time come back in here for a formal meeting is at 4 o'clock for the sutta class. Yeah, I have some thumb drives. You got the computer? They're going to get one later. Okay, yeah, we'll get some later. What do you want to have this time? Because we're talking about, there's some people here from the, just come in for the first time for a retreat, some old timers. Yeah, some of you, I remember, you've been coming to my retreats for years and years and years. And you're still not enlightened. Never mind, one day. Or maybe you are enlightened, but you're just pretending. Yes, yes. Okay, very good. So what type of talks do you want? Deep ones, shallow ones, medium. Oh dear. Okay. Did somebody put super glue on this?